is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop. Right on.
Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. Don't punish me,
sister,
with brutality.
Sister,
talk to me,
sister,
so you can see.
Sister,
oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
Hey, what's going on? A little Marvin Gaye for you this morning. Great singer, wasn't he, Marvin Gaye? Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy. This is Tampa Bay's libertarian radio program. For Wednesday, April 22nd, we thank you for joining us. In a few minutes, Mark Thornton of the Ludwig von Mises Institute will be with us. He's out with an article today on the latest, what he calls, skyscraper alert. A kilometer-tall tower in Saudi Arabia indicating economic collapse, my friends. We're going to talk to him about that. Also, the Department of Energy warning us that our country's grid system is ripe for a terrorist attack. And these are the things that nightmares are made of. So we will talk about what can be done. Also, in our Freedom Works Ultimate Top 10 list, the top 10 largest sports stadiums in the world, capacity-wise, the top 10 in the world. Freedom Works, we come to you Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. here on the great Tantalk Radio Network to talk about the concept of individual liberty, personal freedom, the things that you find in our Declaration of Independence and Constitution, the idea that individual freedom promotes everybody's happiness, and that's why we do the show, to talk that way and about those kinds of things. Anyway, glad you're with us. Mark Thornton from the Ludwig von Mises Institute out of Auburn, Alabama, in a few minutes. And they're building a 200-floor, think about it, 200 floors tall building in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, the tallest building in the world. It'll have a luxury hotel. It will have... what else does it have in here? It can have a whole town in it. Office space. There will be residences. Many other luxury features. Can you imagine the view you would have? Of course, what are you going to look at in Saudi Arabia now that I think about it? Would you just look at desert? Although, you know what? You're close to the Red Sea. You're not on the Red Sea. You're close to it. But if you're that high up, maybe you can see Italy.
And what? Imagine if the elevator was out of order.
Yeah, what if you had to walk? Isn't that amazing? I wonder if anybody could walk 200 flights. That would be amazing. That would be amazing. You'd actually celebrate a birthday on the way up. You know that? Yeah. Well, anyway, I think it's very interesting because Mark, and we've had him on before, we've talked about this. Mark is going to tell us why building skyscrapers, a skyscraper boon, is an ominous sign for our economy worldwide. Now, why is that? Well, we'll let Mark Thornton tell you. So in just a few minutes, he'll be on. Also, I want to talk a little bit, as promised, about this possible terrorist attack on our electric grid system. Now think about it. The Department of Energy is warning us, there's a new report out, that our electric grid system, which is getting obsolete in many ways and provides most of the electricity to our entire country, faces a threat from terrorism. And it's just not that secure. But not only terrorism, the DOE also says that climate change, now this is where I'm going to leave the path, leave their path. Storms by climate change could knock out things like Wall Street, hospitals, and the internet. Well, I'm not sure, you know, climate change. We have storms all the time. And we have, hey, we've all had blackouts in our house, so we know that that can happen. In fact, the city of New York back in late 60s and then again in the 70s had blackouts. So I wouldn't call that climate change. I would call that electrical storms that have done damage. Anyway, in the administration's first ever what's called quadrennial energy review, they suggest that modernization of the grid system, an absolute must, estimated cost $900 billion with a B, and add in the updating of power plants, and your price is now $2 trillion. Now, the department's been warning of an aging, inefficient, and congested electric grid for 10 years or so. Now we got terrorism, and it just adds to the misery. So are we going to be able to deal with it? And remember that a lot of these grid systems, of course, are now being tied into computers. And if it's tied into computers, then you worry about the hacking and all of the other things that go with it. But indeed, if I was a crazy terrorist, I would take a look at the grid system. And have you ever seen those reports where some journalist drives right into some electric power plant somewhere and nobody's in at the fence and stuff like that? They go into the parking lot, then they walk into a building and they say, this is how easy it is. I mean, that's what you'll worry about. Anyway, Mark Thornton is with us. We're going to take a break. When we come back, worry about skyscrapers. We'll be back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Anchorage, be patient. Halifax, hold tight. Prague, Spokane, and Markham, you're just going to have to wait. We know you miss your boys, but they have no intention of returning before they bring home the Cup, the Tampa Bay Lightning.
The 2015 Stanley Cup playoffs are on sale now. Visit TampaBayLightning.com.
This is Dr. Bittaker, your new host on Natural Health in You. This is a call-in radio program designed to give you information about the complementary alternative healthcare field. You got questions about vitamins, minerals, enzymes, acupuncture, chiropractic, nutrition in general? Then call in every Saturday on WTM between 3 and 4 p.m. and ask a question. That's every Saturday between 3 and 4 p.m. Also, you can go to our website, naturalhealthinyou.com. You can sign up for a free newsletter at that time and see just exactly what we do.
Hi, I'm looking for somebody that can transform my home. Can you do that?
I can do that with my mural creations. This is Jordy the Artist. How are you?
I'm fabulous.
You know, you called 407-310-8589 and you reached me. You might know I have a show here on Tantalk 1340, Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. as a matter of fact.
Fabulous.
You know my number?
No, I don't.
407-310-8589. Hope you wrote it down.
407-310-8589. Got it.
The biggest air show in the South is back in Lakeland. Sun and Fun International Fly-In and Expo celebrates its 41st year all week long, April 21st through April 26th. This year promises to be bigger, faster, and louder than ever before. Experience the heart-thumping, awe-inspiring performance of the Breitling Jet Team's U.S. debut and the Air Force Thunderbirds. See thousands of aircraft both in the air and on display, and an open flight line of historic warbirds. Sun and Fun offers fun for the whole family with daily air shows, a kids zone, a classic car show, and lots of great food. Florida residents can make it a weekend the family will remember by coming Saturday, April 25th and Sunday, April 26th to experience three shows for the price of one. See the Breitling team perform at 3 p.m. Stay for the Night Air Show, which includes aerobatic flyers, pyrotechnics, and a dazzling fireworks display. And come back Sunday for an additional show. Sun and Fun International Fly-In and Expo, celebrating its 41st year all week long, April 21st through April 26th in Lakeland. It's bigger, it's faster, it's louder, it's Sun and Fun.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Thanks for joining us on Freedom Works, and we're delighted to have our buddy Mark Thornton back with us. Mark is a senior fellow at the Ludwig von Mises Institute. He's also the book review editor of the Quarterly Journal of Austrian Economics. Welcome back, Mark.
Hey, good morning, Paul. It's great to be back on the program with you today and your audience as well, of course.
Our pleasure. And of course, we've talked about this. I think a couple of weeks ago we were talking about it with you, Mark, and that is the correlation between building skyscrapers around the world and economic collapse. And now you've got an article that is coming out today dealing with one of the latest skyscrapers, in fact, the tallest in the world. It's in, I believe, Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely, Paul. Saudi Arabia, for some reason or another, seems to be the epicenter of world news, whether it's the war against Yemen, or the collapse in oil prices. Saudi Arabia is ground zero for all this, and now they're building what's plans to be the world's tallest skyscraper, the Kingdom Tower. And you're right, it's in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, which is a small city on the Red Sea in a desert. And this Kingdom Tower is projected to reach a height of over 1 kilometer tall.
That's so, almost a mile, isn't it?
Well, they wanted to build it a mile tall, but the bedrock in the area couldn't hold up under such weight and stress, and so they reduced the height to 1 kilometer, which is less than a mile, but of course it's, you know, I'm not sure how to convert that into feet, but it's a
long jump. And it's 200 stories. I was talking with Ed during the break. What if the elevators weren't working?
Well, that's a good question. That's why they have to invent all new technology. Every time they have a new record-setting skyscraper, you have to invent a whole new technology to get people up and down, to get airflow up and down, to get water and sewage up and down. It's a very expensive process. It's a very time-consuming process, and the cranes, the cement pumping equipment, everything that goes into that, the glass, the exterior, the air conditioning systems, everything has to be created anew. And so that's why we bring attention to record-setting skyscrapers, because of all of these changes that have to go into effect in the construction, the design, the engineering, the architecture. Everything is brand new, Paul.
Yes. You know, it used to be it was the United States that came up with all the tallest buildings, you know, whether it was the Empire State Building or the Sears Tower. And all of a sudden, you know, you see the Twin Towers in Malaysia. You see what's going on in Saudi Arabia and other parts of the Mideast and the Far East, and all of this is going on. I know we're going to get to the reason for the connection here between finance and skyscrapers, but why is it we are not still building the tallest?
Well, that's right, Paul. I mean, we started setting records in the United States in the 19th century, and that continued on up throughout the 20th century with the Empire State Building, the Sears Building, the Trade Towers. And so we were the record-setting skyscrapers, and we are still building, you know, humongously tall buildings right now in Manhattan. And there was a report out just yesterday that somebody a decade from now wants to build 217th West 57th Street, official rendering for the world's future tallest residential building. So we're not out of the picture, but you're right. It's moved to Asia and the Middle East.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is it's flourished all over the place. All right, let's get to the point. And the point is that when we see these skyscrapers being built, we better start worrying about an economic collapse. And this is what you talk about, Mark. Please explain the connection, if you would.
Well, this connection was first noticed in 1999 by a financial analyst, and I saw the report, and I immediately was struck by the fact that undergirding this correlation between record-setting skyscrapers and economic crises was the Austrian theory of the business cycle, which, of course, the Mises Institute is the big proponent of. And basically what happens is that when central banks artificially lower interest rates, which they're doing right now, and they make credit easy, which they're doing right now, people start building speculative buildings, and this leads to over-speculation in the economy, easy profits in the economy, and ultimately the building of a world record height in skyscrapers. And so there's a reason why there's a correlation here, and it's because the central banks are artificially lowering interest rates, making stock markets go up, making profits easy, making everybody a genius investor, and ultimately people start, you know, engaging in luxury spending and speculative investment. And the ultimate, in terms of high-end luxury spending, is the world's record-setting skyscraper. So, you know, when you talk about the high end, going up a kilometer in height, it's hard to imagine, you know, going up that high in the middle of a desert, but that's the ultimate in speculative luxury spending. And this Kingdom Tower is going to include a luxury hotel, Class A office space, all sorts of luxury type items are going to be embedded in this Kingdom Tower in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. And so it fits the pattern that we've seen for over a century now. And so that's why I've issued today on Mises.org a skyscraper alert, because, you know, it's probably not going to be the case that the economy is going to collapse today, but it's probably going to collapse as this building is going to go up. And when the building is completed, we will probably find ourselves in a world economic crisis, because that's been the pattern, Paul, for over one century.
Right. We're talking with Mark Thornton, again, senior fellow at the Ludwig von Mises Institute in good old Auburn, Alabama. He's also the book review editor of the Quarterly Journal of Austrian Economics, and he has come out with an article today. In Saudi Arabia, it's looking bubbly for skyscrapers and more. And I know, Mark, that, of course, it's skyscrapers just being an indication of what is coming. In other words, it's easy money. Speculators can go and borrow money at very low interest rates and spend it and start building things. If it isn't skyscrapers, it's more shopping centers or golf courses or you name it, you know. They get into all of that, and that's what you're saying. So tell us a little bit about the Austrian theory here as it applies to this.
Well, that's a great point, Paul, because it's not just the skyscraper itself. It's obviously not the building of the skyscraper that causes the economic crisis. It's an indicator. But I can see it in Auburn as well. You don't have to go to Saudi Arabia to see it. I mean, I can see luxury restaurants being built and, you know, Auburn students going to these luxury restaurants and spending a lot of money that, frankly, college students typically don't have. And so the Austrian theory is that when the central bank artificially reduces the interest rate below what the market would typically bear, that causes all sorts of changes in the economy and encourages people to borrow more money than they otherwise would, and the borrowing goes into speculative investment and luxury spending. So you can spend beyond your means in terms of consumption, and you can spend beyond your means in terms of investment. And the investment end is where the trouble really occurs, because you're sinking money and future consumption into investment projects that will not pay off in the future. They will not render the revenues necessary to cover the loans, and therefore when the revenues show a shortfall and the loans can't be paid off, that's when you have the breakdown, the collapse, and the economic contraction that sets in. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the Austrian economists have been warning about this. We've warned about it in the past. We've predicted past crises. We're not very good at, you know, projecting exact changes in GDP to the, you know, one-tenth of a decimal point, but we do have the ability to generally see major changes in the economy and to be able to predict these types of crises, not how bad and not exactly when, but the skyscraper index that we've put together is proven to be a reliable indicator of what's going on in the economy. And so, and it's not just in Saudi Arabia that they're building big buildings. They've just completed the tallest building in China, and China is sinking into a contraction as well. And so this is a worldwide phenomenon. It's not just in Saudi Arabia. It's not just in China. It's the whole world is caught up in this zero interest rate policy and real right. estate bubbles.
Now, back, say, when the Empire State Building was being built, and it was being built right around the Wall Street crash of 1929, right? Because it came out, opened in 1931. But there was no Fed at that time clamping down on interest rates, correct? I mean, this was a skyscraper being built. All of a sudden, the collapse during its construction, a terrible economic collapse. Some would argue the worst we've had. And it was a different reason, right?
Well, not exactly, Paul. I mean, we did have the Fed. The Fed came in 1913.
Were they clamping down on at that time? Were they actually, did they put their foot down on interest rates rising, or what was going on at that time?
Well, in the 1920s, they were lowering interest rates and they were injecting credit into the economy to help out the British and to help out the British managing the value of the British pound in exchange rate market.
Okay.
And so we were inflating in the 1920s, that was causing us a bubble in the New York stock market as well.
What was the, I don't know if you would know this, but let me ask, what was the interest rate, for instance, say you wanted to borrow money and you were, in the United States, what was the interest rate then?
Well, the interest rate... The Fed at that time was not targeting the federal funds rate. It was targeting the discount rate.
Right.
And providing money to banks so that banks could provide money to commercial enterprises, and that was less than 2% at the time.
Less than 2.
Yeah, so it seemed reasonable to most people at the time, in comparison today, where the federal funds rate is, 0.25, it's actually less than 0.25 of 1%. It's actually 0.17 of 1%. So what seemed normal back in the 1920s, it was below the market rate. It wasn't, ridiculously low as they are today in the United States. And in some places, government bonds are trading at negative interest rates. So this is a whole new ball game compared to the 1920s.
What happens then? Okay, so are we headed for a depression? If so, when? Is it just going to be a very strong recession? What do you think?
Well, I'd like to know myself. I think that the theory tells us that we're definitely in for an economic contraction. There's no question about that. And the skyscraper index, which is, to tell you the truth, it's very hard to rely on that as an indicator. It's been remarkably correct, but it's something that cannot remain as correct as it's been. But that's telling us that we're going to have one of the most severe economic contractions in about a year or so, or two. Mm-hmm. And given the fact that we have these ultra-low interest rates, theory tells us that there's only two ways out of it at this point. Even if we started on a rational economic policy, it's either going to be a very, very severe economic contraction, or they're just going to put it all into the pipeline and head us down the road to hyperinflation. And we don't know where Washington, D.C. and the Federal Reserve are going to take us. But from my perspective here in Auburn, Alabama, at the Mises Institute, I don't see us getting out of this unscathed in any way. We're either going to, you know, take the punishment, which they're building these bad investments. They're building these, you know, super record-setting skyscrapers. We're not putting our savings and our resources into what's good for the economy, and therefore, ultimately, we're making bad investments into the future, and that means the future is going to have a lot of trouble that we're going to have to face.
Yes. Now, some would argue that when you are building something like a skyscraper, you're employing all kinds of people. And by employing all kinds of people, you actually are kind of kickstarting the economy. What you're saying, though, is that, yes, you're doing that, but it ain't going to last, correct?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, you could say that about the housing bubble, too.
Right.
That we were employing lots of people, we were
right.
making lots of money, but we also built an inventory of houses that's going to take probably at least a decade more to run through. And so we're building things, we're employing people, but we're making the wrong things. And that's what the Fed is doing. It's distorting interest rates, and it's distorting our ability to calculate what should we be building. And we shouldn't be building record-setting skyscrapers a kilometer tall in the middle of the desert in an unpopulated area of the world. That's the mistake. Is the Fed is engendering these misallocation of resources and causing us to throw our savings, whether we like it or not, into projects which are not going to pay off. That means we're going to be poorer. We're not going to be able to produce what is ultimately valued by consumers. You know, if we really just wanted to employ people, we could just print up money and have people digging ditches and print up more money and have other people fill those ditches in.
Yeah.
And you know, we're not producing anything. And that's essentially what we're doing. We're producing things that are not valueless, but they're not as valuable as what we could be doing with our savings and properly employing them to produce goods and services that consumers ultimately value.
One last question. If Rand Paul became president, would he stop the Fed from doing what it's doing? In fact, would he tell them to take their foot off the pedal and allow the release of interest rates?
I would hope he would. I don't know him personally. I've never met him.
Well, you remember his father audited the Fed, Ron Paul.
Yes, I do know him. I do know Ron Paul, and Ron would certainly do the right thing, and I hope that Rand would do the right thing. It's actually better to take our lumps in the short run and in order to avoid the inevitable political reality of entering central bank-created hyperinflation, which would destroy money, would lead to the breakdown of society. We've seen that in revolutionary France, revolutionary America. We've seen that in Zimbabwe recently. We saw that in post-World War I Germany, the meltdown of society. That's what a central bank and a paper money system can do, is the meltdown of the economy and society. It's better to take our lumps, go into a contraction. The economy, entrepreneurs can fix the situation despite the pain. And I hope that's where Rand Paul or any of our future political rulers would take us.
Terrific, Mark. As always, it's always a stimulating conversation with you. Thank you so much. And I know we'll be talking down the road again. And thank you again, and good luck with your article.
Yeah, and it's available to all your listeners at mises.org.
Mises.org. Terrific. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Paul.
All righty. Mark Thornton. Okay, my friends, off we go. We'll be back. I want to talk a little bit about SUVs are being purchased by people that used to own electric cars. Why is that?
Is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you been struggling with family conflict, depression, or trauma? Has something been keeping you up at night, causing excessive stress and worry? Tune in to Moments of Clarity every Wednesday night at 8. After over 10 years as a psychotherapist, I realized how important it is to take the stigma out of seeking professional help. So tune in Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. The call to me can be a great first step. It may just be exactly what you need to hear.
The city of Dunedin introduces baseball done our way. Start with a morning on our pristine beaches. Next, off to downtown for some unique shopping. Then a bit of lunch at one of our many award-winning restaurants. And now, time for an afternoon game at Florida Auto Exchange Stadium. Finish the day off with a sunset cruise on the Gulf. A day in Dunedin. A day done our way. For more information, go to DunedinGov.com.
Guys, you're in Florida. You want to look as great as the weather. Stand out from the crowd. Shop at the menswear store on Gulf Boulevard at the Shops at Sand Key, next to Columbia Restaurant. All the top designer brands are right here. Tommy Bahama, Tory Richards from Hawaii. The largest selection of Robert Graham clothing in the Tampa Bay area. This is a men's shop so good Isaac hasn't even named it yet. Top quality like Olakai sandals and many more designer brands are available. The menswear store in the Shops at Sand Key on Gulf Boulevard.
At the Oaks of Clearwater, you'll enjoy a lifestyle to fit your needs. From independent living, assisted living, memory care, and skilled nursing. Our exciting independent lifestyle is the perfect combination of freedom, comfort, and security. Enjoy total independence with peace of mind. Our independent lifestyle includes chef-prepared meals in our beautiful waterfront dining room, a continental breakfast, all utilities, including cable and telephone, housekeeping with linen service, scheduled transportation, including trips for shopping, local restaurants, theater, and more. Our activities program is second to none. At the Oaks of Clearwater, you'll enjoy affordable luxury waterfront senior living with a million-dollar view. Call today, 727-445-4069, and discover where caring, compassionate service really makes the difference.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Thanks for being with us this Wednesday, April the 22nd, WTAN, Tantalk Radio Network. You're listening to the Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. And you know all these electric cars. By the way, today's Earth Day, right? It's Earth Day, so we should be... you know, very seriously, thinking about how we can do things that promote our wonderful Mother Earth. Indeed, you know, it is precious, and we do have to look at ways of keeping things going as best we can. Well, President Obama promised to put 1 million more hybrid and electric cars on the road while he's president. But maybe that ain't working out too well. The you know Edmunds Car Magazine? Well, they have found that 22% of people who have who bought hybrids and electric cars have traded them in 2015. And what did they buy? They bought SUVs. They're going back to SUVs. What's going on? Isn't that the opposite of electric cars? In terms of, you know, oil and gas and all that stuff. Now, this number is higher than the 19% last year. But it's also double the number that traded in their electric cars for an SUV just 3 years ago. So something ain't working right with the electric cars and USV and hybrids. Now, Edmunds reports that only 45% of this year's hybrid and electric trade-ins have gone towards the purchase of another alternative fuel vehicle. So more people are still trading in their, you know, their hybrids, et cetera, for other good electric and hybrid cars, but 22% are not. That's kind of interesting. Now, in recent years, you know, celebrities and politicians have been hyping electric car companies. Now, the Tesla is an example. It's very hip to own it if you can afford it. I believe the Tesla runs at least $100,000 a year, and most of us cannot pay that for a car. But there's even some tax credits that are being handed out by the federal government to encourage people, you know, to buy electric vehicles and the rest. This is, of course, this is not at all what the federal government is supposed to be doing. I mean, they're getting their sticky fingers into everything, are they not? They're getting their sticky fingers into making you buy cars or not buy cars. They get their sticky fingers into your health care, which should be in the private sector. They get their sticky fingers into the internet, which should be in the private sector. And this is a perfect example. But if you buy an electric car right now, you can get a $7,500 federal tax credit. Obama wanted to get 1 million electric cars on the road by the end of this year. But electric cars were much more attractive when gas prices were higher. Now gas prices have dropped a little bit since then. Remember the $4 gas? And now we're at what? Well, around Tampa Bay, it's about $2.35 or so. So instead of 1 million, we got about 200,000 electric cars running around on the streets. So apparently the electric car craze is not yet quite caught on. Also, this is something that libertarians, I guess, really get excited about. There is now a town called Liberland. It has 250,000 people. It's been created by a self-professed libertarian politician from the Czech Republic. It's a sovereign country. It's on the Croatian-Serbian border. Big Ed and I are going to take a trip to see what it's all about, where citizens decide their own tax burden. They don't. The government doesn't decide. You decide as an individual. They also decide their own property. They also decide their own individual rights. And here is their motto there, live and let live. That's their motto. Guy's name is Vit Jedlicka. He's a member of the Conservative Party of Free Citizens. He recently appointed himself president of the Free Republic of Liberland. Now, of course, I always worry about somebody that self-appoints themselves a president. So, as much as I like the country, I think I wouldn't take my eyes off Vit Jedlicka. You never know what this guy is going to do, right? Didn't Adolf Hitler promise the same kind of thing in 1933 Germany? I'm not sure, but now Jedlicka says neither Serbia or Croatia, neither neighboring nation claimed the land when they established their borders following the breakup of Yugoslavia. So this is this little sliver of land that's sitting there, and he went and he scooped it up. The objective is to build a country where honest people can prosper without being oppressed by governments making their lives unpleasant through the burden of unnecessary restrictions and taxes. That, according to a statement that that they put out on this. Now, it's been carved out of the kind of the western bank of the Danube River. So you get a little water right there, too. It's really basically about, I guess, 3 square miles of land, which was left unclaimed. So there you go. I think we shall go to Liberland. We want to go and pay our respects to Vit Jedlicka while we are there, and I'd like to take a look at his crown. Anyway, we're going to take our break, And when we come back, we're getting a lot closer to the top 10 largest sports stadiums in the world.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We have a special guest on the line, Pete Rose. Pete, how you doing, buddy?
Rick, I'm doing all right. How you doing?
Good to talk to you. You know, Bill called me and told me you were coming on. So excited. You got the new thing on TLC.
Pete hits and misses. Exciting. We're having a lot of fun and going there and just talking sports with you.
Fires, Rose swings.
There it is. Get out.
Rocket Sports here on the Tantalk
Radio Network.
Join Rick Sassone in the Rocket Sports Show Fridays from noon to 2 p.m.
Hey, Dr. Paul here. It's my pleasure to welcome Captain Bill Hine to the WTAN family. Don't go fishing till you hear Captain Bill's show, Artificial Angler. 8 a.m. Saturdays on 1340 a.m. and video on Tantalk1340.com. Welcome aboard with Captain Bill on Saturday mornings at 8, 1340 a.m. and Tantalk1340.com.
Go yard is a metaphor used in baseball, meaning to hit a home run. Life struggles can make you feel like you just struck out. It's times like these that we need a little batting practice to pick ourselves back up and get back in the game. Whether you are dealing with marital issues, drug addiction, rebellious teens, anxiety, depression, or just generally having a bad day, call Mama Mac. If life has you down 0-2, before you strike out, learn to go yard. Go yard with Mama Mac on this radio station, Thursdays, 6 o'clock.
Does your car have sick car syndrome?
What's that?
That's when things are not working, like brakes, air conditioning, exhaust, suspension, transmission, check engine light.
If this is happening with your car, then the place to take it is Cooper's Automotive Repair Service, 1603 North Hercules Avenue in Clearwater. Tim, Robert, and Brenda are committed to deliver trusted, safe, and reliable automotive repair and maintenance services. And right now, Cooper's Automotive has a Monroe Shock or Strut special. Buy three and get the fourth free. 10% off a BG radiator system flush service, or come in for an oil change special. 5 quarts of 5W30, only $19.95. Cooper's Automotive, 1603 North Hercules Avenue, Clearwater. Call 727-443-7922. 727-443-7922. Cooper's Automotive has highly trained ASE certified automotive master technicians. Check their website, coopersar.com. That's coopersar.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Back on Freedom Works, thank you very much for joining us. And we would be remiss if we did not mention today that it was 1 year ago, actually April 21st, 2014, when our buddy and owner of WTAN, Dave Wagenvoort, passed away. Dave and Lola, and Dave was a wonderful man. When I started here back in 2004, he and his dear wife Lola were most gracious to me when I started out and helped me out quite a bit. And over the years, Dave had been a kind of a mentor in a certain way. I think he just you could always get good advice from him, and he always was very positive about everything, and it's really hard to believe that it's been a year since Dave left us. And so we want to, you know, make this special little comment about Dave, a lovely man, and we still miss him, and we miss him very much. Well, we've got some things here that... I think I'd like to talk a little bit about income inequality, the way Bill Gates sees it. Bill Gates, of course, the co-founder of Microsoft, has been quoted in an article in Fortune magazine, and he has a solution to this so-called inequity, you know, with all these people that need the money, and then just a few people that's got so much money, all right? But he's right now probably the second wealthiest man in the world. And he does not agree with the ideas of the French economist Thomas Piketty. Piketty has made a splash this year. He wrote a book called Capital in the 21st Century. It argues that It's a fundamental law of capitalism that wealth gets more concentrated without destabilizing events like global wars. And Piketty's solution is to come up with a global tax on capital that would help governments better understand how wealth is distributed and then stem the tide of increasing inequality. This is absolute nonsense. First of all, we don't want any global authority taxing us, right? We don't need that. We got enough trouble with the authority in the United States taxing us. But if you believe Forbes, there's nobody else in the world that has more money than Bill Gates other than Carlos Slim. And Gates' critique of Piketty, which was published earlier this week on his own personal blog, isn't completely self-interested, because remember, he's pledged to give away half his fortune over the course of his life. And that's a lot more than the 1% or 2% wealth tax that this guy Piketty would employ. So he doesn't really have a dog in the fight, but he doesn't agree with him. And here's what he has to say. Imagine three kinds of wealthy people. First guy is taking the money he's making and building his business. He's putting his money back into his business. Then the second guy gives most of his wealth to charity. He lets them handle it. The third guy is just taking the money and spending it all over the place. And anything he wants. He buys a new yacht. He buys an airplane, whatever it is. Now, Gates says that while it's true that all three of these people are contributing in their own way to what he calls inequality, he argues that the first two, the guy that puts his money back into his business and the one that gives to charity, are delivering more value to society than the third. Well, Mr. Gates and everybody else listening, I will respectfully disagree. Although I could not even stand anywhere in your shadow when it comes to technology. I think with economics, you're a little off. No matter what you do with your money, if you create wealth because you have something that somebody else wants and they come to you and they keep buying more of it, and that's how you make your money, right? You can spend your money in any way you would like, and short of stuffing it into your mattress, even if you invest it, put it into the bank, or run around buying yachts, airplanes, and everything else you can think of, what are you doing? You're employing other people because you're putting your money to work by giving it out, whether it's in a bank or to a company that makes a yacht or whatever. Other people are now being employed. And what happens when other people are employed? They spend money too. And that's how the whole system works. That's how the free market works. So all of these things about which of the three people, right? The guy that puts it in his back into his business, the one that gives it to charity, or the one that spends like there's no tomorrow, they're all doing the right thing. Anyway, there you go. Lecture over. And it is time now to figure out what are the top 10 largest sports stadiums in the world. Now, Ed, I know you're going to know some of them.
Okay.
But some of these I've never heard of, if you want to know the truth.
Because anyway, they're probably not in this country.
That's right. These are the largest in the world capacity-wise, right? And by the way, it comes from Wikipedia, so I think we can believe it. Mm. So here we go. Number 10.
Get
on the drums.
I had to get my sticks.
There you go. You want to try that again? He forgot. I didn't allow him to get over and sit down where the drums are. Are you seated? Okay, here we go.
One, two, three.
Number 10. Well, you would know this one. It's Bryant-Denny Stadium, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, where the Crimson Tide, the University of Alabama Crimson Tide, 101,821 people.
Mm-hmm.
You know that when they go to that stadium, did you know that Tuscaloosa is probably the second largest city in Alabama at that moment?
Wow.
Only Huntsville would be bigger.
Wow.
That's my guess. Okay, or Birmingham. So it'd be the third largest. All right. Number 9. We go down to Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Baton Rouge.
And it's the LSU Tigers Stadium. It's called Tiger Stadium. 102,321. You know, so far so good. We're staying in the United States, right?
Mm-hmm.
You think the next one might be in the U.S.?
What do you think? I think we're going to take a run.
We're going to take
overseas.
A ride. Okay. Yeah. Number 8. Wrong.
Mm.
Knoxville, Tennessee.
Ah, New Tennessee being there.
Tennessee Volunteers. It's called Neyland or Neyland Stadium. They seat 102,455 people.
Isn't it amazing 3 of the top 10 so far are for non-paid athletes?
Yes. You're right.
It's amazing how much money college football makes.
Where's all that money going? Where's all that money going? Okay, okay. Number 7. Staying in the good old USA, we are going down to Texas A&M Aggies Football Stadium.
4 of the top 10.
Exactly. This is Kyle Field, and it's just got a few more than the Tennessee Volunteers. They've got 102,512. Number 6. Ah, USA, USA, USA. Columbus, Ohio, Ohio State.
Five in the top 10.
Yes, it is.
Wow.
Ohio State, and it's the 6th best, 104,944. What do you think about number 5? You think it's in the U.S.?
There's got to be some soccer stadium across sea somewhere.
Let's find out. Number 5. Wrongo.
Uh-oh.
We're still we're deep in the heart of Texas. With the Dallas Cowboys new stadium. It's called AT&T Stadium, and guess how many? 105,000. Yeah. Right on the nose.
Yes.
Right on the nose. If you threw one more seat in there, it would screw the whole thing.
I know the Rose Bowl is going to be somewhere. I think it's 106,000.
It could be. Okay. All right, here we go. Number 4. Now we leave the United States. This is Mexico City. It's called the Estadio Azteca Stadium, and Club America, the Mexican national football team, plays there. 105,064. They got 64 more than Dallas.
I think the Dallas Cowboys played a preseason game there once.
Yes, I think you're right. I remember. All right, number 3. Back to the United States. Up to State College, Pennsylvania. Penn State.
Mm.
Beaver Stadium, 107,282. And now I am beginning to wonder, why are all these colleges, why do they have the most?
Hmm?
What's going on?
Huh?
Where's all that money going?
Hmm.
Colleges must be gold mines.
Yep.
Okay. Number 2. Ann Arbor, Michigan. And
the big house.
Yeah, the big house. It's Michigan Stadium, where the Michigan Wolverines play. 109,901.
Wow. Been there. Been there, great place.
Have you?
Yes, and it's very deceiving. You walk up to it, and you're like, it's only 2 stories high. Then you walk in, and it goes down about 5 stories into the ground.
Wow.
Yeah.
I imagine the crowd noise must be unbelievable.
Yep.
Now that I think about it. Okay, and now the number 1 largest sports stadium in the world is?
It has got to be out in California and the Rose Bowl.
You are absolutely wrong. Wrong, wrong.
Oh, come on. No. Really?
Yes, I'm not really. Really. It's in North Korea.
Oh,
Korea, your favorite country.
Oh.
It's where they have an association football team. It's called Rungrado. I can't believe North Korea would have it. But it's the Korea DPR national football team. 150,000 even.
Wow, wasn't even close.
Wow.
He needs a college football team in North Korea.
I'm telling you, I just cannot believe it, but it is that indeed. Freedom Works, my friends. We will be back on Friday. Bye for now.